Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, as they say, let's try this again. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is your home for what we like to call conversation radio. Available at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com under the button that says Listen Live, but also available at places like TuneIn Radio's smartphone app, Stitcher's smartphone app, places like Dar.fm, Streamer.com, Roku devices, my goodness gracious. All kinds of availability. This is a live program. You might be surprised to know that, but it is true. It is a live program. It is the 11th day of April, 2013. My last night for this week in Washington, D.C., heading for home tomorrow. Because, among other things, there is a Dr. Bill O'Brien, Professor Keith Lilly, PRISM West Virginia American History Chat on Saturday at 3 p.m., and I hope you'll tune in for that. So, that's why I'm heading home tomorrow, to be home on Friday. And then all of next week, back at home as normal as possibly can be. Now, what's going to happen when I get home? This is what's going to happen when I get home. I'm going to try to find out why 4 computers out of 4 have mysteriously died in more or less my absence. And frankly, I don't know what the answer to that is, but I've got Saturday night and all of Sunday to get things sorted out and fixed so as to be live on the air on Monday. I wish it had been a power surge, Waggy, but none of the computers have the same symptoms. One is acting like it's just crashed and the hard drive's dead. Another one doesn't want to see the monitor. Another one seems to have a power supply issue, and I don't know what the hell's wrong with the fourth one. So that's my weekend coming up. It has been a very, very busy week here in Washington, D.C. You know, of course, that we are broadcasting live. Yeah, we, me and that mouse in my pocket. No, my colleagues, Bo and Benji, are in the next room. It has been a very productive week here. We have pounded the pavement all week long in an effort to bring more people on to the AHCE Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, as part of our ongoing Appalachian Communities Health Emergency campaign, in which many of you have participated by calling your member of the House and contacting senators as well, asking for their support, and in the case of the Senate, for the bill to be introduced there. If you haven't, you still can, because we'll be back here in 2 weeks, hopefully with a lot of these highly annoying technical issues sorted out, but you can learn everything you need to know about the work that we're doing and why we're doing it simply by going to acheact.org, acheact.org. The science is there. The bill is there. There's a means for you to contact your member of the House of Representatives or the Senate all in one place, and I think our work is going to bear fruit from what we have done this week. We had meetings, a lot of meetings and a lot of meetings getting set up for a week from, week after this coming. So, by all means, cross your fingers. Because this is the only shot that Appalachia has. This is the only chance that Appalachia has. Central Appalachia, I should say. The regions, the portions of the regions, the region that is cursed with coal under the ground. Talking about eastern Kentucky, southern West Virginia, southwestern Virginia, and northeast Tennessee, where they do mountaintop removal. Much to our horror, much to our chagrin, and much to our, disadvantage? Yeah. So, that's what's going on. And hopefully, for instance, we were in one meeting today, and the person we were talking to said, yeah, we've heard from our constituents, and we were rather surprised. Well, that could be you, or it could be some folks reaching out because of some outreach that's been done by some of our other close allies. But it matters. Reaching out to your elected representative matters in ways you might not necessarily fully expect. So, I'm sorry, I'm multitasking again. But by all means, go to AICACT.org and take action. It'll make you feel good. Because you will know that you're doing something very serious and very helpful. Let's see here. Paul, I also wanted to let you know that Paul from Parts Unknown has sent in a challenge. He says, I understand there was no show last Friday. I extend my challenge from the Wednesday show until the end of this week. So between now and the end of the week, dollar for dollar, up to $50, our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown will contribute. You do 50, he'll do 50. And that sure will help because the tech problems have been a real devilment in getting a show out, which means it's a real devilment in keeping the show going. Paul did offer some ongoing thoughts. He said, I would just like to put in my two cents on your statement, Cold Civil War. I don't disagree that it's happening, but I don't think it wise to participate in it. Well, you're here. Family history is very important on both sides of my family. There are oral stories of many family members passed down through the generations. One is of my great-great-great-grandfather, who fought on the Civil War on the side of the North. It left a huge scar on the culture that one could argue has never fully healed. It destroyed families, broke lives and bodies, like all wars do. He was so disgusted at the end of it, he no longer had any respect for America. Yes, freeing the slaves was a good thing, but like all wars, it was just the window dressing that hid the con. There was a massive land grab on both sides, north and south. War widows of yeoman farmers sold their land to rich men who were making plenty of money on the carnage. During the tough times, the rich profit much more than anyone else, Paul notes. After the war, he traveled west and ended up becoming part of the Lakota Sioux tribe. The lesson? In every war, there is something. Money, resources, gold, that the powerful want and are willing to sacrifice you and your family for it. A quick note, this whole austerity policy should be called what it is. You pay while the rich play. And Paul from Parts Unknown says, good luck in D.C. next week, which is this week. Thanks, Paul. It has not been a very lucky week, but we sure do appreciate the challenge and your willingness to help us come even. We try to raise about $150 per night, and this would be a big help. Joining in on Paul's challenge would get us two-thirds of the way there, and that's very, very important in the effort to keep all of this going. Important also is what, and I wanted to share Paul's note with you because of what he said about the ultimate outcome of just about any war. Because being here in Washington, D.C., as I think, among others, Jim has pointed out in the past, this can be a rather unreal place. And we sat here earlier today watching the for-profit media blather on about North Korea. And, of course, Doug Lamborn of Colorado today quite did he breach national security today? Did he? It's kind of hard to tell. Talking about the fact that North Korea may or may not sort of, kind of, maybe, in a way, have a ballistic missile that they can put a nuclear device on top of and deliver to somewhere parts unknown. And all that is as, take it as read, if you will. Because what I observed out of that was something entirely, perhaps tangential, but I was standing here talking to my buddy, my colleague, Bo, and Wolf Blitzer was babbling away. And I said, doesn't it make you a little bit sick to realize, and we had already observed the fact that it was pretty obvious, at least it's obvious to me, that Wolf Blitzer was, well, I don't know what he was doing with one hand, but the other he was enjoying himself with every time he thought of the idea of getting to cover some war, you know, from somewhere nice and safe like a TV studio. Because it doesn't matter what channel you're on. And this is one of those for-profit media things. It doesn't matter what channel you're on. They're all, if you watch it for any extended period of time whatsoever, they are all beginning to vibrate. They've got a little hum. They've got a little aura about them where they are yearning for war.
Well, it's good for ratings, Bob.
No doubt it is. No doubt it is. I was involved in a little conversation on Facebook. Yeah, I know, Facebook is icky. I agree. But I was involved in a little conversation on Facebook a couple of weeks back with a guy who was a pretty reputable journalist who had worked for one of the big for-profit media so-called news outfits. And they were, the question was being bandied about as to exactly when the for-profit media went to hell. And the assertion was made that the for-profit media really jumped the shark in the way it stenographed and cheerled the run-up to the attack on the people of Iraq and subsequent wholesale slaughter thereof. But I had a different take. And it has a little something to do with the fact that I was there when this particular thing happened. It was the late 1980s. It was at CNN. And somewhere, in a place that we had never heard of before, Midland, Texas, somehow or another, a precious little baby girl fell down an abandoned well. And, of course, it was any mother's, any parent's nightmare. It was that particular family's personal foray into hell. And for the first time, it really was the first time, cable news was able to cover the story with absolutely exhaustive depth. She was referred to, of course, as Baby Jessica. And rescue crews worked round the clock because she really was at the bottom of the well. This was no balloon boy hoax. And time really was of the essence because there were issues of starvation and dehydration to consider. And so when the baby was finally rescued, a couple of days later, the managing editor of CNN, a guy by the name of Ed Turner, not Ted Turner, Ed Turner, yeah, it was a little confusing for us too, sent around a memo, and I used to have it, I kept it in my briefcase. And he talked about how you can all say that you were there when the news business changed forever. When a little baby girl down a well changed the very idea of how we approached news. And Ed Turner was correct. CNN absolutely flogged that story until there was nothing left to flog. Wore it out. And from that day to this, wearing the story out, flogging it until there is nothing left on it, has become the operative mode of television news coverage. You know, but for that, maybe Rupert Murdoch never would have begun that electronic cesspool that is known as Fox News, and which we refer to as Radio Rwanda. Thank you, Sandra. Who knows? But I say all that as prologue to this, that in the breathless, almost yearning, eyes looking positively haunted, with an aching need, manner in which Wolf Blitzer and any of his other for-profit media colleagues deliver the latest daily news on North Korea, you know that someone has told them, probably from over in accounting, how great a nice, hot, fresh war could be for the quarterly profit and loss statement. And at that point in time, I turned to Bo and I said, doesn't it make you a little sick at your stomach when you realize that somewhere back in the production department or the graphics department or the music department or whatever, that they've already got, and it's true. I have no doubt of its truth. They have already got the soundtrack ready to go. It'll be very Martial. That's M-A-R-T-I-A-L, Martial. It'll be very Martial with a lot of drums, maybe some horns, some heavy reverberant bass. It'll be dum diddly dum diddly dum diddly dum 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 diddly dum diddly dum diddly dum dum. And there will be a graphic image of a 3D computer rendering of that North Korean flag with the star in the middle, and it'll be waving a little bit, and it'll clash up like football helmets do on Sunday against the Stars and Stripes. and there will be a font that says something like, War in Korea. Brought to you by Archer Daniels Midland and Monsanto, supermarkets to the world. Or by Union Pacific. Because, see, that's the other thing. As the for-profit media begin to ache and masturbate over the possibility of this great big sea of profit that's headed toward them in the form of bloodshed, mayhem, and massacre. Well, the sales guys have had to go back over the rate card. Oh, wait, I mean, we can sell you, run a schedule, but buddy, you might wind up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Don't you want to make sure that you're right there in the breaking news coverage? Oh, it's going to cost you extra, but think about the exposure you'll get. You know, and I know, that every last thing I have just said is an honest-to-goodness, on-the-ground fact. Inside Fox, inside MSNBC, inside CNN, inside Headline News, well, except for Nancy Grace, maybe. She's just nuts. CBS, ABC, NBC, none of them are immune to this. They are all vibrating like struck tuning forks, waiting for the money spigot to open when the missiles fly or the bombs fall or the North Korean horde pours across the 38th parallel. Man, that'll be great for business. Because, as Paul from Parts Unknown points out, there are always those for whom war is great for business. And there's just something about that that doesn't sit well on either my gut or my conscience. And that, you see, is, after all, why, with no small amount of disrespect, we refer to these creatures as the for-profit media. Because profit is the overarching reason for why they do what they do. If they could figure out some way to not deliver news but still make a profit, then they'd do that. I am, for instance, deeply conflicted over what's going to happen at 9 p.m. on Sunday night on CNN. We've had a lot of fun talking about and talking to, on a couple of occasions, Anthony Bourdain on this program. Well, his new CNN gig starts up Sunday with a trip to Myanmar, formerly known to the rest of us as Burma. Do I sit down and watch it? Or do I let it blow past and take some small satisfaction in knowing that I'm not feeding the beast? Understanding that I don't mean beast by Anthony Bourdain, I mean the beast in terms of the for-profit media. At least the Food Network and the Travel Channel didn't make any pretense toward being journalism. when in fact, in many instances, Anthony Bourdain was actually doing journalism. In spite of himself and certainly in spite of the network. So a little food for thought as we begin this sad little lonesome show toward the tail end of the week. We've got meetings again tomorrow, I should tell you, just so you'll know what to expect. We've got meetings again tomorrow, the last one of which is at noon, after which I'll be getting on the road. And so, in that case, there will be no show tomorrow night. Sorry. I probably won't be getting home until probably 8 or 9 p.m. And then, like I said, the fun begins. Trying to diagnose one computer at a time. And many thanks to those of you who have helped out in trying to remedy that situation. And I'll tweet or something to let you know how progress is going. Sorry, checking in on some email. And by the way, many thanks to John Fox. You know, I mention John every night at the close of the program. He has been of inestimable help sorting out the technical devilment. That has ridden on my back for the last week or so. Okay, this is a rational and reasonable answer. Dr. John writing in. Subject line, you sit down and watch Bourdain. Then you write a detailed letter to CNN explaining how you watched it only because of what Bourdain does right and how you don't watch other CNN programs because of what they do wrong. Then you Facebook and tweet it all over creation. By Jove, that sounds like a plan. And thank you, Dr. John, for giving me a reason to. Because for a long time there, the only television program that I committed myself to on a regular basis was No Reservations on the Travel Channel. And I was a sure enough fanboy. So that does sound like a plan. What else? Oh, good God. I've been away from, we haven't been able to get a show out, or something has interfered or intervened. Also, you know, there have been late afternoon meetings, and those, well, they are what they are, and they're kind of what we're here to do, so, you know. But good God, I feel like I can't turn my back without the crazy just busting loose all over. And the sad thing is, I figure you've already heard most of these stories. I'm just still trying to figure out the mechanics of one of them, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we can at least have a wee bit of a giggle, I trust, I hope. And of course it's a Republican. Of course it's one of those family values people. I just don't understand the mechanics of it. Because the simple statement is enough to boggle the mind. Tennessee politician, sorry, Tennessee, it could just as easily be West Virginia or Alabamistan or Idaho or God knows Kansas or Oklahoma. It just happens to be Tennessee. Tennessee politician arrested for habit. In other words, this was not a one-off. Oh, probably off is not a word I want to be using. Tennessee politician arrested for habit of masturbating out car window at 90 miles per hour. And my first thought was, goodness gracious, who was driving? I mean, you'd kind of have to have an accomplice for that, wouldn't you? But no. No, apparently not. Which is what I find so mind-boggling. Down in Mount Carmel, Tennessee, named after a place in the Bible, of course, down in Mount Carmel, Tennessee, they had a vice mayor by the name of William Blakely, emphasis on the word vice. And he's been charged with exposing himself to several women, individually, over the course of years, while driving an automobile, rapidly. Off in Johnson City, Tennessee, which is over in East Tennessee, WJHL News Channel 11 and their eyewitness team coverage, I'm sure, William Blakely is reported to have see, the word they're using here is hang or hung. I'm going to take the high road and go with displayed. Displayed his genitals out the car window, this family values, upstanding, God-fearing, moral paragon of virtue Republican that he is, displaying his genitals out the car window while driving down the highway at speeds in excess of 90 miles per hour. And apparently, no, he did not have an accomplice. And I will, at this portion of the program, admit to having engaged in some questionable conduct while operating a motor vehicle. I can proudly say that none of them involved the display of genitals. I've done dumb things, like trying to eat a blazing hot slice of pizza, the molten cheese on which was hotter than the interior of the sun and blistered the roof of my mouth and the hand that was holding the slice. That's the kind of dumb stuff I've done while driving. Well, okay, there was something involving, I believe it was either, it was Frampton Comes Alive. That was a fold out. And there are seeds and you got to get rid of it. And it was a long time ago. And I don't do that anymore. And I'm not proud of it. But at no point in time, story just gives and keeps on giving. While the run-ins with Blakely happened at different places and different times, all of the women's stories began the same way, with Blakely, vice mayor of Mount Carmel, Tennessee, Republican family values, Blakely, pulling up alongside them on the highway, not at a traffic light or anything, just kind of drawing even. And then a waving, trying to get their attention. Deanna Dykes described him as having waved and then grabbed at his shirt and kind of pulled it up. Then Kelly Street said, after the waving, it turned into a lot of beeping, him grabbing his chest area and asking me, going, please, please, clasping his hands together with his hands. Show me yours. And then this from Deborah Sturgill. He was taking his hand, wetting his mouth, and masturbating. I was scared that I was going to wreck. He was going to cause me to wreck. Ms. Sturgill, who offered the greatest level of detail, continued. She said, at over 90 miles per hour, he had his penis out the window. He was masturbating. And that's when it got really, really bad. We will leave Ms. Sturgill's estimation of when it got bad to Ms. Sturgill. I'm still trying to figure out the mechanics of how you do any of this. I mean, at this point in time, have you got it on cruise control and your feet are up on the seat part of the seat and you're, damn! He was masturbating, and that's when it got really, really bad. I wouldn't look over anymore, and I wrote his tag number down on my hand, which I believe he noticed, and he exited very quickly. Remember, this happened over a period of years. But no longer, because Detective Terry Christian wasn't going to tolerate it, and she said she had heard the department there had received dozens of complaints over the years about women ranging in age from 16 to 65. But they only got the break they needed in the case when the one woman wrote down the tag number. I'm a little flabbergasted. I'm not a prude. I just feel bad. I feel bad for anyone who has to put up with that. And it must have been rather daunting to have to testify to it. And yet, of course, we are not in the least surprised to find out that, yeah, Mr. Blakely is a Republican, and yes, it has something to do, this conduct has something to do with his being a Republican. It's how their minds work. You can, you know, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R? Yeah. Yeah, see, Michael figured it out long before I did. He just wrote in and said, cruise control, that's how. No, Sandra. But, you know, they can do that. Dr. John, oh God, he did what? Bob, if I run out of vomit, can I borrow some of yours? I know. And then Dr. John, being the diligent researcher he is, had to go out and do some research on the interweb tubes. And having seen a photo of this guy, I really doubt anything was hanging out the window. Unless maybe there's some kind of phallic Doppler effect. No, 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 no. They look bigger at higher speeds, like how a train whistle changes pitch. I got to get off this imagery, says Dr. John. Yeah. But it's just another day in Jesus land. Yeah, Marty, with the the technical questions just keep rolling in. Cruise control is not autopilot. How does one steer? Maybe he's got the Google car. Michael's hard at work on potential bumper music. Paradise by the Dashboard Light. Meatloaf? No, we've sworn never to play Meatloaf anymore. Cars by Gary Newman? That's possible. I Can't Drive 55 by Sammy Hagar? And you know what? That's an open question. Will said Repig Lickin be required to register as a sex offender? Marty asks. Irish Dave wanting to know, were there beads involved? Did he really say, show me your tweets? Ron and Raleigh. Good to hear your voice, Bob. Thank you, Ron. It's good to be back. Concerning the legislator displaying himself, what the heck was he steering with? See? I'm not the only one. The Repig Lickens will reelect him because he is forgiven. Yes. Not perfect, because they've got that bumper sticker. They've got that bumper sticker. They really, really do. Not perfect. Just forgiven. I'm gonna try not to let this entire program degenerate along these lines, but yeah, Randy taking it to the next logical step. Oh, I can just see that guy in traffic school. And so, yeah, it's not. There's nothing funny about sexual abuse. If we get a giggle out of this, it's because it's another Republican being a filthy hypocrite. And we get some enjoyment out of putting that light on them. But this is abusive conduct, plain and simple, that took years to catch. God knows how many women he's done this to. I thought of Bill O'Reilly earlier today. I saw a food truck parked up here on Capitol Hill, and it was selling falafel. And I guess I will never be able to look at that word again. Bill O'Reilly has ruined it for me. I can't even order it off a menu anymore because I get this mental image of Bill O'Reilly rubbing some woman's back with falafel. Yeah, that's what he said he wanted to do when his sexual harassment suit quietly went away. But what this Blakely character, or Blakey, whichever, did in Tennessee is not that far removed when you think about it, because when someone is of either gender waving their genitals at you, although men are the only ones who can really wave genitals when you get down to it, I guess, I don't know. I mean, there's flashing, but, you know, waving. But that's, you know, it's a form of unwanted abuse. It's a form of abuse, and it is not wanted. There were none of these women who got in their cars and said, well, my, oh, my, what I would like to see as I drive down the highway here in lovely Mount Carmel, Tennessee, is someone with his penis hanging out the window, flopping it against the car door. And I've been away from the microphone long enough that I wasn't able to do justice to the ongoing story, which has stopped being an ongoing story, of chinless Mitch McConnell's desire to torment Ashley Judd. Because that was abusive conduct, too. Sandra asking via Twitter, are you sure it wasn't a flesh-colored dildo? With that story, Sandra, I am sure of nothing. And then again, there's that whole issue of flesh-colored and what exactly we mean by that. But there's not just a whole lot of daylight's difference between what this guy was doing to random women on the highway and what Mitch McConnell wanted to do to Ashley Judd. Because Mitch McConnell is, after all, a most disgusting piece of work. And yes, he was caught on some kind of a recording discussing and describing the attempt to defame Ms. Judd as whack-a-mole. Now, I don't know what whack means in Kentucky, but I know that whack has certain connotations in other parts of the country that are not nice at all. Oh, yeah, they were going to paint her as crazy. They were going to use her own words again. Part of the campaign that's like that old game at the carnival called whack-a-mole. But now, since the tape came out, the recording, I should not say tape, now since the recording came out, we have Chinless Mitch playing the wounded victim, oh sweet Jesus. And saying that he had had a Nixonian dirty trick pulled on him. Hardly. Meanwhile, a member of the so-called Democratic Party of the Commonwealth of Kentucky has apparently rolled on a couple of members of a group in Kentucky who heard it being said, therefore recorded it, allegedly. I much prefer the mental image that I get when I consider Chinless Mitch McConnell the mock turtle, if there ever was one, absolutely bedeviling himself trying to figure out which member of his inner circle could not be trusted. And I'd say even if they think that they've got this thing all nailed down and sorted out, I'll bet you Mitch, has some trust issues arising out of this. But naturally, Mitch has spun it into his victimhood as opposed to the fact that he got caught plotting some garden variety filthy politics against a person who wasn't even an announced candidate. And that's the kind of sleaze merchant Mitch McConnell is. I wouldn't trust Mitch McConnell with the run-over carcass of a dead skunk. I kind of think it would be abusive to the skunk to put its carcass into Mitch's tender care. Right? So it's kind of a start. These little vignettes. Now, I must admit, I got furious when I read the way that Mitch McConnell and his ilk were discussing and describing Ms. Judd. No, not because I've got some sort of a crush. But because, in fact, I mean, I don't know her. She doesn't know me. But I know that she's had the courage to stand up and speak against mountaintop removal. And if in a place like Kentucky you've had the courage to do that, one way or another, you're my friend. And so I've got that old habit to think that old tendency to think that an attack on one is an attack on all. Wasn't that from Eugene Debs? But what else would we expect from Chinless Mitch? He's a coal thug. They have no class, no sense of decency, no sense of propriety, and are concerned primarily only with perpetuating the horrors that they do in the name, of course, of holy profit. Anyone who was shocked by the way that Mitch McConnell was talking about Ms. Judd, who has about a million times as many brain cells as McConnell does, obviously doesn't know what the coal industry once did to her, putting a nude cutout of her up at some allegedly reclaimed mountaintop removal site that had become some sort of godforsaken golf course, and mocking her, saying, "Ashley Judd took her top off. Why can't we take the top off the mountains?" Really. That's the mentality that you're dealing with. Nice, huh? So, yeah, that didn't exactly come as a surprise, at least to me. So, you know, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. It's for-profit media. Oh, yeah, and the for-profit media have been more than complicit in describing the detail. Why make it worse, Bob, right? So that's just the start. Michael letting me know, he said, "So I went off on a bit of a rant about the other day. Pissed me right off," Michael says. Well, let's see how pissed Michael got. So Mitch McConnell and his cronies are caught on tape discussing how Ashley Judd is supposedly emotionally unstable. That got to me too, Michael, because after all, that's what we always say about the women folk. They're emotionally unstable. I mean, what if she was in office and got her period or something? Right? And how they will attack her on that basis. She then says she's not going to run for Senate. Then, when the tapes are publicized and make him sound kind of like the jerk he is, Mitch McConnell tells the press that he was the victim of a Watergate-style bugging operation by the political left. FBI investigates, sweeps his office, finds no bugs. Paranoid much, Mitch? Isn't paranoia a form of emotional instability? Yeah, see, wouldn't you love the for-profit media to ask kind of these kinds of questions? But no, I guess no. If Judd doesn't run, then the Turtle Man should drop out as well. Clearly, he is emotionally unstable. Fact is, the scrutiny and criticism Ashley Judd has been getting wouldn't be nearly as harsh if she was an actor rather than an actress. See Reagan, Schwarzenegger, and Fred Thompson. I hope she reconsiders public office, regardless of what Kentucky Republicans, not to mention Democratic Party bosses, think of her. The Democrats need more people like her, not more corporate shills. Very well said, Michael, and true across the board. So it's about 3 minutes before the hour. Kevin writes in from Colorado Springs. Bob, it's occurred to me more than once since the McConnell story broke that this is all a setup by the turtle himself. Recording discussing how best to derail the Judd campaign while saying that the place was bugged and that he himself is the victim. I don't completely believe that, but the thought has occurred. I sure wish Ashley would run against him and use his own words against him, turnabout being fair play. I wish she would find the courage to run, but if you remember, Bill Clinton did pay her a visit a couple of weeks ago, and that's when she decided not to. I wonder what was discussed and said there. Good to hear you on live, signed Kevin. It's good to be back live, believe me, Kevin. Do you suppose... Irish Dave asking, do you suppose he's throwing a hissy fit or a Mitchy fit? Yes, he is throwing a Mitchy fit. Tamara from San Diego says, so it's a puny little thing, but I'll be dropping a $10 check to the horn through by way of the U.S. Postal Service first thing tomorrow morning. Got to have something for Boss Man Wayne to open. Also going to get on that ACE Act biz myself tomorrow. You know, we'll all have more time with you working overtime in D.C. and all. Thank you, Tamara, and it is nothing puny or little about that. Every bit of help is badly needed. Thanks going out to Thomas, who answered Paul from Parts Unknown's challenge. Deeply appreciated. Thanks to Randy for the help as well. You might not believe it, but we've covered fundraising for tonight. That's wonderful. Thank you all. So here we are at the top of the hour. We'll take a break. Lots more stories out there. And, of course, while we don't have the home studio and Agnes is not taking your calls back in West Virginia to pipe them through to me because of a variety of technical horrors that I can only... I can't wait to find out exactly what they are. You can still reach the program via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the account contact. If you want to get on the program that way and we've not established as friends or whatever contacts, all you have to do is send me a request and I'm right there. And I'll approve it. But if we already are, then fire up your Skype and get involved. This is Conversation Radio, a bit one-sided though it may be at the moment. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oh, by the way, Ron in Raleigh says, the other bumper selections are very good, but mine is the correct choice. Ron says that with real authority, I should note. Come on. No. The laptops cannot get recalcitrant now. It is no. Play, damn you.
When you scream. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I don't want to jinx anything, but it really is kind of nice when stuff works. And, wow, the intro worked and everything. So thanks for sticking around, and thanks for your patience. Here at about 9 minutes past the hour, go straight to the Skype lines, and Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra. Sandra? Oh, just a minute. Are you there?
Yeah.
There
you hear me?
Yeah, I got you great.
Oh, good. Yeah, I wasn't too sure if you were going to be on there, Bob.
I've been worrying. I've been wondering myself. It's been rather a frustrating week, to say the very least.
Yeah, I guess, man. Hey, listen, I just, I don't have that much because, you know, all of it is so overwhelming and dispiriting. I just had to disengage. But I have to share this with you. Did you know that the lovely Obama budget may be considering selling the Tennessee Valley Authority, privatizing it?
Safe.
Yes, let me read the a federally owned company. Is a not-for-profit organization, which the company touts as a reason customer electricity bills are so low. Maybe you can tell the good people what the TVA is, Bob.
Kind of happy to. I grew up with it. The Tennessee Valley Authority started out as an effort to bring low-cost electricity to an area that didn't have it, largely by means of reining in the power of the Tennessee River. And then they went sideways, building things like nuclear power plants that don't work that well. And the Republicans have hated it for years and years and years, saying that the government ain't got no business being in business against hardworking power companies.
Well,
and they're also rather despised in certain environmental sectors for the fact that, well, when we had the big Kingston coal ash disaster of some years back, right around Christmas,
right.
That was theirs.
Mm.
And they burn more mountaintop removal coal than any other power provider.
Well, anyway, yeah. Well, it's you know, it's listed as you know, possibly on the fire sale block. I mean, You know, it's, you know, this, yeah.
Are they going to sell the Hope Diamond, too, over there at the Smithsonian?
You know, I mean, to me, I'm just like, you know, I'm sorry to say, but, you know, Obama is just revealing himself to be, it's just unbelievable. I'm just sort of, you know, I mean, gobsmacked. Not that I didn't expect this, but it's like, I'm not being reelected, bitches. Fuck you.
Yeah, I don't ever have to go through that whole election thing anymore. And chumps.
Right, I got to get paid after 2016. So, you know, up yours. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it because, you know, he don't seem to care about his legacy. He really don't give a F about the Democrats that have to run every 2 years, right?
Oh, I thought Bernie Sanders, well, Bernie Sanders went down to the White House fence today. Did you happen to catch that? With a bullhorn.
Oh, shit. What was he? Oh, no, I missed that. Good one.
Yeah,
what
you're not,
say?
Just, you know, you're not, the chain CPI is gotta go. We're not gonna tolerate this. And look, I mean, I've been watching, this is part of the reason I've been losing my mind from not being able to get on the air, Sandra. But my God, progressive Democrats, Democracy for America, I've gotten an email going, all of them saying, no, this is not what we voted for. Well,
it's a huge mistake on his part, though. I mean, it's outrageous that he seems to think that this equivalent between loopholes or a little bit more money from the rich is okay to start decimating this program that more and more Americans have to have, or they're going to face destitution. You know, he's not talking about what, you know, my proposal is, lift the cap all the way up and then lower the tax to 3%.
And, well, no, see, there's so many parts of it. I've got the story here about the paying for preschool with a cigarette tax.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's another one. And that's and
it's regressive to hell, though.
Well, it's regressive as hell. And there are people who could very easily say, well, you know, Bob's a nicotine addict, and that's probably why. No. What I am is a progressive person who believes in, well, social democratic policy, Roosevelt-y, FDR democratic policy. And frankly, if national, and this is my only argument, if national preschool is important enough for us to make it a policy priority in this country, then it is damned well important enough for everybody to have a stake in paying for it, isn't it?
Oh, I know. No, I mean, it's just, it's the whole setup here is just so bizarre because I can't tell you how many people, have no idea that there is a cap on the income that's taxed. And that's because most people don't make above $113,000. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they don't know that that is an option. And that number has, you know, gone up progressively, but it's fairly arbitrary. I mean, there is no real reason for it to be at X amount. And the fact that the elites and the people elected, they never talk about it, it's just another form of protecting, you know, the rich and leaving everyone here scrambling, you know, scared, because if you're an old person, you need to be scared of what Obama is proposing.
And that's,
I mean,
that's the big difference
moral.
Here.
It's disgusting.
Even with Paul Ryan, yeah, I walked past.
He touched Social Security.
I walked past him today, and it was just like, yeah, I wanted a shower. But even with him, the right kept saying, well, you know, we're not going to touch people who are getting benefits now. It's just going to, you know, it's for the, but no, this is stuff that affects people's benefits right now.
And it's a cut. And the thing is that, I don't know if, you know, if Obama is thinking people are just completely, just dumb, but, you know, I just think it's a huge mistake. I'm not too sure how it's going to play out. But, you know, he's getting lamer by.
Yeah, generally more disappointing. And, you know, we've used that old rubric from time to time, and you and I have even discussed it, Sandra. You know, only Nixon can go to China. But the fact of the matter is, Nixon went to China for a reason. What is the reason for making seniors choose between food and electricity, or electricity and medicine?
It's completely Mao. I don't know what it is. It's really quite troubling, because if this man is actually thinking, well, I'm going to do this because if the conservatives and the liberals are upset, I must be doing something right. Bullshit that they always try to.
And see, that's exactly what got trotted out right before showtime. Some White House spokesperson was, well, you know, Wolf, this is a compromise, and that means that people on both sides of the aisle are going to be unhappy, and that's how you know it's a good compromise.
No, I mean, that trope is some BS. We're talking about earned benefits for folks. This is stuff that's been paid for. And, you know, no one gave him, he has no mandate, nothing to touch this. The Social Security don't impact the deficit by law. You can't use savings from it to reduce the deficit. I mean, I can go on and on and on. The Social Security law is a well put together piece of legislation. Otherwise, it would have been fucked over by now. And Obama thinks he's going to step in and do the job? He tripping. I mean, I just think he really overreached. I don't see it happening. Boehner already said, oh no, it's not, you know, they're already making fun of his ass. Like, oh, well, you know, oh, and running on it.
Well, yeah, oh yeah, because, what did I see? Yeah, I did too. Obama tapped into Medicare to pay for Obamacare.
He's right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, but it's so predictable.
But I guess the question I'm asking, Sandra, is it an overreach per se? Is it exactly what? See, I keep going back to that time on the boat that we've talked about before, when Alan Grayson said that his answer to what would you do, you know, the beauty pageant question, was entitlement reform.
Well, no. I don't mean it's an overreach for him. This is what he exactly wants to do. But what I'm saying is, I'm not too sure if he's going to be able to get it, because I think he has some different ideas about what is a useful legacy as a Democrat, and what 80% and more of the American people keep saying over and over and over again. I just think that he's doing untold damage to the Democratic brand. Even if they stop him from making these cuts, he's already done damage to me.
He certainly hurt anybody who has to run for re-election in 2014.
And it's just, you know, so I'm not, no, I think that he believes that he needs to, I remember reading years ago about the whole idea that they need to bring down the standard of living by one third across the board for American
workers.
Jesus,
what a number.
So this is, to me, part of the plan, because keep in mind that behind all this is coming the big push for the Trans-Pacific Partner NAFTA on steroids that this administration is sponsoring big time. So, you know, you look at what's going on, and neoliberalism becomes neo-feudalism, which is what it is.
Well, it absolutely is.
There's no society, just individuals and families. That's the key. Families. So that shit is straight up feudalism, all of them.
And by the way, the angry Indian just sent a message through saying, why are liberal folks not willing to accept that they were sold out? Hi, Bob and Sandra. That's what it boils down to, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I just think that, you know, okay, yeah, don't bring out Bush's fool me once, okay, because that's where we're at. And, you know, that's fine, everybody. You made a mistake. Now it's time to, you know, get right with God or whatever you need to do, because, you know, this motherfucker's coming after your Social Security.
And even...
Oh, I don't know.
He wants it. And even... And I don't even like to bring this up, because I'm so sick of 11-dimensional chess I could vomit.
Oh, there is no, it's a bad policy all around, my goodness.
But even if he did this knowing that the Republicans would reject it because there are tax increases and loophole closures, isn't this still a very, Sandra, isn't this still a very, very dangerous game of chicken?
Well, not only that, but it's also disgusting. I don't want my mother sitting around scared. Fuck him. This is the thing. You know, he playing his little games, but there's old people sitting around scared, witless. You see what I'm saying? This is what I mean about it. It's not right. It's the wrong political.
No, that's what I'm getting
at.
Even if it's something that the Republicans are going to reject out of hand, it is still
playing with it.
It's wickedly cynical.
Right. And that's the thing that's quite disturbing about his whole persona around this entitlement reform obsession he got. Because, no, his trade-off never equals out. $14,000 a year can never be reduced by saying, oh, looky over here, they're not getting a yacht today. Please. Hello.
No, that's not, not
you
getting
know?
A yacht.
And like, you know, that just drives me, makes my head want to explode.
Yeah, that's the, they didn't get lobster for lunch today.
Oh, and it's just, and that's what he keeps, you know, rolling out. And it's just not working with people because people are like, that's not equal. And, you know, my mother didn't cause, you know, the housing crisis. You see what I'm saying? Or
Hold on a minute. Wait, let's go there. This supposed fine that was worked out between the banks with the illegal foreclosures.
$300?
Yeah, don't spend it all in one place.
We're going to get 1,000 people who are going to get $125,000, which they keep talking, but you look underneath there, and the other million or so are going to get 300 big ones.
I won't even buy a crappy TV.
It's just beyond the beyonds. And also remember, while they're talking about, you know, screwing over old people right away with the quickness, they gave away $13 trillion to shore up the banks. So they got money, they printed it, but they can print that shit for this too. Shit. I mean, I'm sorry to cuss. I just am like,
No. This is
it's outrageous. You know, and it's, you know, if I hear Obama say the word balance, I'm be get on Fox. Shit.
No,
you know
no. See, I'm all done with balance because. See, now this is one of those long stories, but he came and gave one of the worst speeches of his entire existence several years ago, and we carried it here on the horn from Charleston, and it was there that he met Joe Manchin, who is proud. I don't know if you've noticed, but Joe's been all over the place lately, getting him some popularity on because he's going to bring us some sane gun legislation. And every time we've ever tried to talk to Joe Manchin about mountaintop removal, for instance, Joe has said, well, we've got to have some balance. And Joe's been talking that balance crap, and I know that is exactly where Barack Obama got that balance notion. And no, bullshit.
No, it's too, I mean, it's, there is, no, you can't have balance when you have you know, a 0.5% holding 40% of the wealth, you know, from that point, there's no, you know, you can't have balance if you have that sort of inequality. So it's just laughable to hear anything about sacrifice because all everyone's doing is sacrificing. So these few people can get rich and pay people like Obama off in his dotage along with his family.
Point of order, get richer. Isn't that what we mean? Richer. No, because that nobody's going to get rich. They're going to get richer.
Yes. Yeah.
We're not admitting anybody else to the club.
Yeah. No, I mean, but it's just at this point, it's just gratuitous listening to these people go on. And, you know, a well-fed, well-sheltered Obama talking about old people, you know, need to accept less. It's just disgusting. I'm like, oh no, you know, it's too much. It's too much. I don't. Anyway, I love the 2 million signatures that popped up right quick. That didn't take but a minute. Well, you know?
But that's also proof that we've expected him to do this all this time.
Anyway.
I was going to tell you, though, because we've had conversations in the past about, you know, what does the sequester mean? Well, I got, because of where our little headquarters are located, I got a real-world dose of it. We're very near the House and Senate office buildings. And usually, unless it's something really big, you go up, you go to one of the doors, you go through security, and you're in and you're done, right? Well, a couple of days ago, I started looking, and these huge, I mean, long, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen concert, long lines are waiting to get in the door. And, I mean, I'm thinking, okay, immigration reform, the guns thing? No. It turns out that we've got long lines of people trying to get into the House and Senate office buildings now because of the sequestration, Sandra. Because they've closed down like all but one or two entrances in every building and furloughed all the security personnel.
Because they don't have the workers to man the buildings, huh?
Right, to run the security checkpoints. So everybody has to go in one door, and it's this giant clusterfuck that sometimes stretches around the block.
I don't mean to laugh, but, I mean, it's just an absurd way of, you know, running a country of 300-plus million people. And it's becoming laughable, you know? I mean, the sequester is some sort of horror show, and, you know, they think they're going to be able to use it to even extract more cuts from people? I don't think so. I don't even know what's going to happen, but this is just becoming some sort of bad parody at this point. It's outrageous, and, they'll just be confiscating people's deposits. I think that's just going to start happening.
Yeah, isn't that convenient?
Told about all the offshore trillions. You know, we hate those people, but they can easily use that as an excuse, and all of a sudden they confiscating not those trillions. Those are protected. They taking, if you have 10,000 or above, you know, we're taking it. You know how it works out. It always works down to the regular people.
Yeah, getting turned upside down and shaking till the jingle falls out of your pockets.
I mean, you think that Cyprus shit ain't a precedent? They got capital flight like there's no tomorrow right now in Europe. They don't even know what to do. It's so bad.
I wouldn't be surprised if there were runs on banks.
They gotta kill that $500 euro note right away. Listen, I know I don't have nothing nice to say. The only other thing I wanted to mention was get ready. I mean, you're on the Atlantic, but I'm on the Pacific. And TEPCO is, by the way, we got to dump. You know, all this water we've been collecting for the last year, we have nowhere else to put it, and so we're going to have to dump it in the ocean. Hello?
Yeah, it's just a big toilet.
Oh, my God. That is so freaky. I mean, gee.
Yeah, because where are they going to dump it that it's not going, because they can't put it in barrels and sink it at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, right? It's global corporatism, and the oceans are just big toilets.
No, and it's just like, you know, I've already been reading reports of, you know, already children are showing signs of thyroid. You know, it's just been 2 years. So I just brace yourself. I just think it's just going to be some sort of hideous dystopian nightmare on the island of Japan and L.A.
Right, because that's how the currents run.
I mean, I don't know. I was just sort of taken aback. I'm like, you know, as a matter of fact, we're going to have to dump all this water in the ocean, thinking, oh, my God, you know.
And then I saw the report today that apparently, you know, that big the plastic dead zone in the Pacific that's twice the size of Texas?
Oh, my God, yes.
Well, guess what? It turns out that ain't the only one. There's one in the Indian Ocean, there's one in the Atlantic Ocean, and now we've found out that they even exist in the Great Lakes.
Now, what is that, the algae stuff that's going on
No,
there?
This is just plastic. This is just trash.
Okay, because I know they're also strangling the life out of everything with the algae.
Yeah, oh yeah, the blooms, sure.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's out of control.
And what, these are the hottest summers in 600 years? Did I read that somewhere? 600 years? Because, see, it's kind of funny. 2 weeks ago, we were still freezing our butts off up here.
Yeah.
And then, well, today, you know, we're doing the Congress stuff, so it's not like you can go in cutoffs and a t-shirt and flip-flops, right? So I gotta put my sweaty ass in a wool suit. And I don't care if they call it tropical weight or not, it is still freaking wool. And we're walking around Capitol Hill, got back here after our work was done, Sandra, and realized we just looked like we'd been in the pool. We were drenched. It was 95 degrees out there.
Well,
in April.
I don't know if you've seen this bit of footage from NASA or one of those. It was the Belfort Sea. Just the whole thing is just cracking up. I mean, it's an outrageous bit of footage in the Arctic where there's cracks that are just, they've never seen it before. So, get ready for the melting season.
Right, but of course, yeah. But Rush Limbaugh, of course, has already straightened us out on all that, and now he's busy working on Melissa Harris Perry.
Did you catch any of that foolishness? You know what? I have to say, I was like, you know, why? Yeah, that commercial, them lean forward, fall over, they really need to stop. You know, because, I mean, Al Sharpton with his gibberish and then that girl, it's just like, she has left herself wide open for that with her Chairman Mao education camp sounding, all the children are ours.
Yeah, because see, when I first read the script to that and saw it, Sandra, I thought, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's
children
a bit...
do not, because she says, our children belong to everyone. Wait, whoa, 13th Amendment, honey.
No, I'm like, dude, what you talking about, Willis?
Let's not talk, let's go back to not talking about people belonging to people.
No, I'm not a fan. You know, she's one of the ones that is, you know, losing her mind because her man ain't acting right. So watch it all.
Well, even, and I think we all understand, and I watch some MSNBC, sure, here and there, why not? But it's a little too fanboy for me.
Well, they got rid of, what'd they do with Ed? Where he at?
Ed's in the gulag, Sandra.
Listen, dude, keep talking about on the show. Well, we got waiting for a date for our new show, and I'm like, oh no, they whipping out all the nice looking white folks and the light skins and you know whatnots, and they put that fat ass I don't know where.
You know, 3 a.m. next to the Jeannie Bra infomercial.
In a lockup. Lock-up.
Sunday afternoons right after prison porn on MSNBC.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I shouldn't. Yeah, but see, Perry, she made a bit of a mistake with that one. That was a bit like, you're begging for an attack from the right, which is what she's fending off now.
But see, that's the thing. There are no mistakes. I looked at all that and said, you know, no way in the world I would get in front of a camera and say something like that. And then I went, yes, I would, if I understood that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yes.
You,
I guess, I mean, you know, yikes. Yeah, but... So yeah, that's my position on that. I don't have no sympathy for her.
Just waiting for Ed to show up on a milk carton.
I know, you know what?
I'm awful. I'm sorry.
This conversation had to go and, you know, ad hominem, but I'm sorry.
Oh.
Oh God. Well, anyway, so let me ask you something quickly about some sports. So the I'm losing it. The football thing.
Oh,
that's coming up.
Oh, the draft?
See, that's why it's so boring. I don't even know what it's called. How come they run, well, with the Ashes, how come they run it down your boy so bad? Gino.
You know, I don't I've talked to a bunch of people, and they're like, "Nah, why bother?" You know, I don't know. He's a wonderful young man. He throws a real nice tight spiral, fast, smart. You know, how many other art history majors are there in the quarterback class of 2013, Sandra?
Yeah, right. I mean, all they're still talking about is some idiot who's not even eligible. That Johnny Football, whatever the hell his name is.
Oh, the dude down at Texas A&M.
But anyway, yeah. So that doesn't look to be too exciting. At least
he ought to be a first rounder. There's no way. But then again, if that means he goes to Buffalo, I think I'd rather he was a second rounder.
Well, what about the future coming out guy?
The phony girlfriend guy?
Yeah, the one that's going to be the first. Never mind. Yeah, is he still on the list?
I saw him getting interviewed the other day. So I guess all of that's worn off, or he's got a new fake girlfriend, or who knows?
Well, anyway, I don't want to mention the Smiths because it just seemed like they're not. Yeah, they're giving him a bit of a hard time. And I'm like,
but that's
that
been going on for a couple of weeks now. Mm. I forget that skinny nerd on ESPN who said, "Well, you know, he's probably." I once thought that I saw the best workout come from. Who was the kid with LSU that wound up going to the Raiders and was a big bust? But I was like, that's a cruel cut. Yeah, and again, I think I pointed out at the time, they didn't compare him to Ryan Leaf. No, young.
I've heard that name. Yes, right. Well.
So, no, I thought you were going to go to the Masters.
Yes. Oh, no, that's another one. You know, I'm like, damn, these men need to keep the tissue nearby the way they're going on about Tiger Woods. It's too much. I'm like, oh my god, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, but by the same, you know, it's the Masters. But everything's okay now. We're going to forget the nasty racial history. We're going to forget the misogyny because you know, Condoleezza Rice is a member at Augusta now, so everything's okay, right?
Oh boy, that's right. Her and that other chick from the Carolinas. I can't remember which one.
Yeah, thank God it's not Carly Fiorina.
Or Meg.
Nutmeg.
Nutmeg, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but just people, you know, having some sort of orgasm on the sports radio, talking about Tiger's back, and it's just like, oh no.
Well, you know what? I do have renewed sympathy and maybe renewed respect for Tiger, Sandra.
I'm talking about him. I'm cool with him. I'm just like the circus around. It's
no,
like,
but
wow.
Not because of anything he did or didn't do. But after all of that business with, you know, oh, Tiger's a sex addict. Oh, Tiger went out a romping on Elin, right? The wife, Elin Nordgren.
Right.
Yeah. When I read the gossip page that said she was dating Chris Klein, who is, of course, the coal sleaze billionaire who's responsible for poisoning Appalachia, Southern Illinois, and now wants to blow up Northern Wisconsin. I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe we didn't get the whole story about Miss Elin.
Well, she had a golf club. That's all I need to know about that. I'm like, oh shit, you know, housewife of whatever hell. So
yeah, I mean, this is not June Cleaver.
No, no, no. I mean, please. Well, at any rate. That starts up when? Tomorrow?
Yeah, the par three was today or something, before or yesterday, and I won't be watching any of it.
I
can't, you know, I used to joke with a buddy of mine because I used to play some golf, you know, public courses, that kind of stuff, but it was always my dream to stand on number 12 and just hit the ball within 30 feet of the hole. After all the times that I'd seen the pros, you know, just sort of roll it back into the water. Hey, look what I did. Yeah, I've seen Jack Nicklaus put it in the drink. Yeah, it's a beautiful place and everything. But the whole place, the whole tradition, the whole everything of it is just up to its neck in racism, and misogyny. I read a story today about a black man who was a very, very good golfer during the late 1960s and early 1970s. And, you know, somehow or another, he just, even though, you know, if you win a major, or if you win a tournament, or if you're in the top 20 of the money list, that gets you the invite to play at the Masters. Except he did all of those things, and the invitation got lost in the mail.
Well, that maybe he wasn't Bagger Vancing it enough. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man, what an awful movie.
Oh, God, you know, and so that's what, you know, that's the, and of course it's Will Smith. Bless him. But there he was again, you know, 6 degrees and whatever. Oh.
Yep.
You know, but I certainly won't be watching it. No, not at all. But listen, it was something else I wanted to ask you, but of course.
Oh, by the way, it was Jamarcus Russell.
No, that's right. Oh, that's the cough syrup dude. Yes.
The cough syrup.
You know, that's craziness. Yeah. Okay.
And by the way, Isaac wants to know what you think's going to happen in North Korea.
Oh, no. Listen, I just saw an article saying that the Pentagon said, well, yeah, actually, they probably could launch nuclear weapons.
Well, that congressman from Colorado, quite possibly sort of breaking the law, announced in the House today during a hearing.
Reuters had an article about it, and I'm just like, what? So, yeah, I have no idea, but I wish Obama would stop sending warships and stealth bombers and drones or whatever else he's sending. Give it a rest, because this dude is, you know, it's pretty scary.
But I don't even think it's about dude. I think it's about military. You know, this 29-year-old kid. And I'm sorry, I should not call a 29-year-old a kid under any circumstance, Sandra. This 29-year-old young man who was educated in the West, I'm guessing, thinks he is the dear leader now. And I can't help but think that a whole bunch of this has to do with his military trying to show him who really runs the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mystery, but it's also a bit of a worry. Oh, listen, God, I have all these people trying to get in touch with me, so I got to go, Bob.
All right, we'll see you, Sandra. It's awful good to talk to you.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Bagger fans. Ron in Raleigh wrote just a few minutes ago with a good question. He says, what's wrong with the other talk show hosts? With the exception of you, Malloy, Sam Cedar, and Papantonio, the rest of the left-leaning talk shows seem to be unable to see Barack Obama for who he really is. If you want to hear a premier Obama spin artist, listen to Hal Sparks this Saturday. He will make every effort to explain away this latest sellout. Wake up, people. You have your chains to lose. And I'll tell you straight up. Here's why I think I come from where I come from on this. And it gives me no joy to say, hey, look, we've been sold. But the fact of the matter is, and this has more to do with it than you might otherwise think, it's got to do with being free enough to talk a little truth. Papantonio is quite well off and does not need radio to survive. Cedar is independent. Malloy has never been able. Nobody's ever been able to tell Mike what to say. Mike says what he thinks is morally and ethically right, and devil take the hindmost, which is why I listen to him, why you listen to him, why we have for all these years. But there are issues of access that attach to people who have to work within the for-profit media for whom being straight up about it is a job killer, a career killer, a go-hungry kind of thing, because their show and their format is based upon access. And if you want that access, then you'd better watch your ass. Because if you cross them, you're not going to get those groovy interviews, and the next thing you know, you're going to be having to talk for 3 hours solid, and you might not be able to do that because you've relied on access to booked guests who want to engage in that whole transactional process as a means to an end. And they'll come on and, "Hi, Bill." "Oh, hi, Fred." And everybody sounds like they're best friends, when not a one of them would recognize another one on the street. But, you know, play that game. Get that access. And I just don't have any, I have no patience for it. And it is far more important to me to have your trust than to try to push something on you that you don't believe, and neither do I. This program's been around for a while. We hang on by a thread sometimes. We get downright close to falling apart sometimes. But we're just that free. Does that make sense? And I don't know about you, but I at least kind of like the freedom aspect of it. And not being beholden to anyone but you, while not much in the way of a business model, this has never been a business. If it was business, I'd be selling you cooking oil or something to smooth your bunions. But it is most emphatically not that. It is a conversation that we have on a nightly basis and that hopefully is informationally useful to you as it is enjoyable to me. And so that, I guess, is the short answer to why other people won't say the kinds of things that get said here. Look, I'm you've all heard me say it enough. I'm 50 years old. By the time my betters are done with it, I may have to live to be 90 to get Social Security. I may have to be 75 to get Medicare. And the fact of the matter is, I'll probably be dead long before that. Because there ain't no health care. And so I'm not going to pee down your leg and tell you that it's raining. All I can do is talk about reality as I understand it. And you, hopefully, can discuss your reality, and we can come to some sort of shared understanding of what reality is. And the reality is the President of the United States, an alleged Democrat, has submitted a budget to the Congress that cuts Social Security, not only for people who might hope to get it in the future, but who get it right now. So that's as close as I can get to anything resembling an explanation. Texas Betsy telling me the Young Turks are mad as hell at Obama. Anybody who holds any degree of regard for the hard work that went in to creating these programs ought to be mad as hell. Like I said with Sandra, even if this is just a bluff, it is still cynical. And the fact of the matter is, out there tonight in this country, there are seniors who are wondering if they are going to get their Social Security that they worked for, that they earned, that they in effect purchased, wondering if it is going to be arbitrarily cut in order to placate a gang of thugs and punks in the Republican Party because the allegedly Democratic president wants to strike a grand bargain. And to do that to our seniors is just plain mean. This isn't a compromise between people giving up equal portions. It's like Sandra said, show me the Social Security recipient, show me the Medicare enrollee who had a hand in bringing on the housing crisis. Here's the quick hint. There ain't none. But tonight, she falls asleep, praying. Tonight, she falls asleep in fear. Tonight, she falls asleep wondering if death isn't maybe preferable to be driven into penury and poverty and a terrifying descent toward the end. And that's happening because a political calculation has been made in Washington, D.C., where I am, that doing that to Granny is more valuable than standing up to a right-wing mob. And I don't know about you, but I am damned well furious. Going out and advocating for a firearms bill does not create some sort of metaphysical balance with screwing over Granny out of something already paid for. So that's that. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. We'll take a little break, come back. I need to just sort of get my head out from around this because it does. It makes me very angry. And yes, enlightened self-interest does play into this. Because it's damn sure a screw job to people who are present recipients. But what just got said to you and to me in my generation is that we are beneath contempt. Really. Truly. And yeah, being able to talk plainly about issues is a function of the fact that you're the ones who keep all of this going. There aren't any free market ads. There aren't any, no bowling balls being picked up by vacuum cleaners and dropped on Swedish mattresses purchased with the interest from the appreciation of the gold we bought. No. It's just you. And, yes, many thanks to Thomas for helping us, and to Randy, and to Tamara, for helping us reach tonight's fundraising goal. We've been off the air for several days. If we could keep that going, it would be very, very helpful, because April has become rather of a deep hole. Green News Report is on the way. This is Conversation Radio on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, April 11, 2013.
The federal government's been managing these lands as if fracking simply didn't exist.
Victory for the people in the federal fracking wars.
The administration's war on coal.
Restrictions on particulate matter are expected to prevent as many as 35,000 premature deaths every year.
Chronic unemployment caused by the EPA policies.
Profits versus people at the confirmation hearing for Obama's pick for EPA. GAO finds nuclear plant emergency evacuation plans are inadequate. Climate change is coming for your wine. Plus,
Keystone XL doesn't go to the U.S., it goes through the U.S., sending oil to places like China and Venezuela. Keystone XL, all risk, no reward.
Environmental groups push back against big oil.
About time. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's week two of the pipeline spill, or as Exxon calls it, the Great Arkansas Oil Giveaway.
Yep, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a few months ago you told me that global warming was coming for my coffee, but now it's coming for my wine?
That's right.
Now we've got a problem.
I know. Climate change will severely impact the world's wine-growing regions. That's according to a new study by Conservation International that projects an 85% drop in production in France and Italy.
Finally, we found a way for John Boehner to care about global warming.
A new report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office says emergency evacuation zones around U.S. nuclear plants should be expanded and updated to reflect lessons learned in the wake of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant disaster. They say that now about 120 million Americans now live within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant, and that 10-mile evacuation zone is probably not enough.
And it's ridiculous. How would you evacuate New York City? How would you evacuate Los Angeles in the event that one of these nuclear plants close to these major areas has a problem?
That's what the GAO says needs to be looked at.
And yet nobody looked at this in advance of building these things.
That's right.
Brilliant.
Exxon has vowed to appeal a New Hampshire jury's fine of $230 million in a civil lawsuit handed down this week that found Exxon polluted New Hampshire's groundwater with MTBE, a gasoline additive used to reduce smog in the 70s and 80s.
You know, we covered recently how these big oil companies pay almost nothing in fines to the federal government, how it is up to the people to sue private lawsuits. And so when they win, we then see companies like Exxon turning around and challenging those suits, taking them all the way to the Supreme Court, and they're often victorious.
And this one has been going on for 10 years already.
Yeah, good luck.
A setback for frackers. A federal judge has ruled in California that the U.S. Bureau of Land Management violated federal environmental law in the sale of drilling leases on public lands in California.
I spoke to the attorney who won that landmark suit yesterday, Brendan Cummings of the Center for Biological Diversity.
This is the first federal court ruling that we're aware of, where a federal judge has overturned a government lease sale decision based on their failure to analyze the impacts of fracking.
This is really a huge win, Cummings told me. He said that this could have national implications when it comes to these land leases around the country, where the administration now needs to take the environmental effects of fracking into account before they give away federal lands.
You can hear the entire interview at bradblog.com. Don't miss it. In the nation's capital, Sally Jewell, CEO of REI and a former oil industry engineer, sailed to easy confirmation in the Senate on Wednesday. But on Thursday, things got a bit testy at the confirmation hearing of Obama's choice to head the Environmental Protection Agency. Gina McCarthy, an air quality expert who's currently an assistant administrator, has rock-solid credentials. So senators instead fought over the mission of the EPA and the conflict of company profits over the health and safety of the people. But as usual, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont cut to the chase.
Really, this is not a debate about Gina McCarthy. Senator Russell made it very clear what the debate is about. And it is a debate about global warming and whether or not we are going to listen to the leading scientists of this country who are telling us that global warming is the most serious planetary crisis that we and the global community face, and whether we are going to address that crisis in a serious manner.
Yes, it certainly is, and about the hoax that the Republicans pretend that it is.
Finally, hilarious new pushback in ads from environmental groups that are using Exxon's Arkansas tar sands pipeline spill to educate Americans on the risks of the much larger proposed Keystone XL pipeline.
In communities like this one, Exxon has revolutionized the way fuel gets to you. We'll pump that right down your driveway.
Love that one. Check that out and the others at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, don't forget to help sponsor the Green News Report so we can keep bringing you the truth that you're not hearing anywhere else in the mainstream corporate media. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
And you know, it is an ambition to bring back that toll-free number. And we intend to do it. I had an email a while back to which I have not responded and need to with an individual who wants to try to help make that happen. First of all, thank you very kindly for the willingness to make that attempt, and we'll be engaging in a little further conversation, discussion about that, I hope. Oh, well, this is annoying. For some reason or another, the Brad Blog is opening time after time on this computer. Stop it. Because, see, I want to get back to some actual stories. This is The Horn. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Yes, a live program, the 11th of April, 2013. Heading home to back to the hills and hollers, and God only knows what kind of computer disasters await me. We'll only know once I get home. Bless her heart, Agnes has been just beside herself with what has gone on. But I remain the eternal optimist, and I think we're going to get it all sorted out. And many thanks to those of you who are helping technologically and hardware and software-wise to make that happen. Now, like I said, other stories. Or maybe I can just sit here and watch the Brad blog pop up on my screen 100 different times. That's kind of weird. Yeah, let's see. Goodbye, Melissa Harris Perry. That's one tab we don't need open. Sandra and I covered that. Children, you know what I'm talking about, right? All the right-wingers from Rush Limbaugh to the Beckerhead to Tony Perkins. Norman? Yes, Mother Bates. Have been excoriating her for her statement about it's basically just a revisiting of It Takes a Child. Or It Takes a Village to Raise a Child. But the fact of the matter is, the phrase included our children belong to all of us, or some such drivel approximating that. And anytime I hear anybody talking about people owning other people, I get a little cranky. Just do. Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs, with a little pushback for what Ron described as Hal Sparks' tendency to defend anything and everything that Barack Obama does, no matter how wrong. Kevin says, I want to defend Hal Sparks to some degree. And I'm going to see if I can actually open your email, Kevin. While not the loudest critic of the president I have heard Hal question things not only the president, but Dems in general are doing. I enjoy Hal's show on Saturday mornings, if only that it's a little more low-key and more humor than shows during the week. Oh, Hal's hilarious. He absolutely is. He has a couple of guests whom I've heard at different times criticize the president, though he himself may not. Remember, his is a Saturday gig. He's more dependent on his stand-up comedy and Stephanie Miller's show during the week than a two-hour show he does on Saturday morning as a side gig. One last thing, it's Saturday he's on, and the only truly hard-hitting show I want to hear on Saturday is Ring of Fire, and I haven't listened to that in several weeks, mainly because I hear it 5 days a week from you and Mike. Thanks, Kevin. After hearing what I hear mainly from Mike and your show, I'm not ready on a Saturday morning to listen to more of the same, though I guess some would say that I need to, so that's my defense of Hal's show such as it is. I'm not looking for Hal to be you or Mike, just Hal and what he does best. I understand, Kevin. And like I said, I think Hal's hilarious. It was a real pleasure getting to meet him. No, Randy, fundraising is not through for the week, not by any stretch of the imagination. This just happens to be the only show that we can do any fundraising on. And so, no, it is ongoing, and any help is very much appreciated as we move toward getting back home and trying to find out, God only knows, what kind of fresh technical hell awaits. Marty noting, fine, as the eternal pessimist, I'll listen to all 3 hours of Shannon Moore's podcast from today, tomorrow, during this time. Well, yeah, there's not going to be a show tomorrow because I'm going to be on the road. This one's not going to be blamed on technical problems. Ron asking, regarding the Iron Lady, may she rust in peace, did you happen to hear Member of Parliament Glenda Jackson positively excoriate Margaret Thatcher in Parliament yesterday? It's nice to see someone tell it is about a horrid dead person. It would have been nice if the same had been done when Ronald Reagan doddered off the scene. Member of Parliament George Galloway suggested that she burn in hellfires. And if there was one, I have no doubt that she would be there. In fact, let's do this. John gave me this last night. And it's a heck of a little tune. Because as long as they continue to lionize and hagiographize, is that even a word, her, I think it is incumbent upon us to remind folks that a lot of people got hurt. And thus John sent along Frank Turner and a little tune called, oh dear me, that's not the name of the tune. Let's see if we can get this to load. A little tune called Thatcher, Fuck the Kids.
Whatever happened to childhood? We're all scared of the kids in our neighborhood. They're not small, charming and harmless. They're a violent bunch of bastard little shits. Anyone who looks younger than me makes me check for my wallet and my phone and my keys. And I'm tired of being tired out, always being on the lookout for thieving kids. We're all wondering how we ended up so scared. We spent 10 long years teaching our kids not to care, and that there's no such thing as society anyway. And all the rich folks act surprised when all sense of community dies. And you just close your eyes to the other side of all the things that she did. Thatcher fucked the kids. Rich only ever talk of charity. In times like the 70s, a broken down economy meant even the upper tier was needing some help. But as soon as things look brighter, yeah, the grin gets wider and the grip gets tighter. And for every teenage tracksuit mugger, there's a guy in a suit who wouldn't lift a finger for anybody else. We're all wondering how we ended up so scared. We spent 10 long years teaching our kids not to care, and that there's no such thing as society anyway. And all the rich folks act surprised when all sense of community dies. But you just close your eyes to the other side. You've got a generation raised on the welfare state, enjoyed all its benefits and did just great. But as soon as they were settled as the richest of the rich, they kicked away the land and told the rest of us wonder our society's in danger of collapse. So all the kids are bastards, but don't blame them. Yeah, they learn by example. Blame the folks who sold the future for the highest bid. That's right, Thatcher, fuck the kids.
And all God's children said amen. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you kindly. That fits rather nicely, because to go back for just a moment to that whole Melissa Harris-Perry kerfuffle, it's worth noting that in his response to her, the street drug addict, Rush Limbaugh, said that she had mounted an attack on the nuclear family. And while this is probably much more within Dr. John's bailiwick, I'm going to take a run at this. But the nuclear family that Rush Limbaugh said that Melissa Harris-Perry is attacking is not the norm, at least within the broad experience of human existence. The broad experience of human existence is, in fact, a variety of different community structures in which more than mommy and daddy look after the kids. With my previous caveat about not talking about owning anybody. They belong to us. No, they don't. But extended family groups, sometimes referred to as tribes, sometimes referred to as clans, are pretty much the norm throughout most of human history. The nuclear family is the aberration. This idea that you can have mommy and daddy and 2.5 children who live an isolated existence inside a tract house where they worship every night around the family altar, otherwise known as the TV set, being fed their thoughts from the glories of the free market. That ain't normal. Isolation is, however, a sine qua non to a consumer culture in which the acquisition of crap is the entire raison d'etre of society, and by which the yearning for said crap is the means by which we maintain some of what we understand to be social control. Religion does some of it, and consumerism does some of it, and fear does another portion of it. But the nuclear family is not, with the usual caveats that go with the usage of the word, normal. No long-term self-sustaining culture has ever very successfully existed on the nuclear family model. The fact that we have, consider some of the symptoms or side effects of the nuclear family. Nursing homes. They largely didn't exist until families were broken up in the wake of the Second World War and scattered to the four winds in an effort to maintain the white-hot industrialization that this country required in order to keep the post-war economy going as hotly as did the wartime economy. See what I'm saying? I hope I'm not just babbling. So, I hope we understand that there are long-term ramifications that attach to all of this. And it's not just the Limbaugh comment that Melissa Harris-Perry is attacking the nuclear family. That proceeds from the line that was referenced in the song Thatcher Fuck the Kids. Thatcher's statement that there's no such thing as society anyway. Possibly the stupidest thing to be uttered by a human being up until George Bush said, history doesn't matter because we're all going to be dead anyway. Society does exist. In the effort, however, to keep us from forming useful ones, well, you need the Margaret Thatchers of the world. And thus we go back to another little tune that Sandra sent along earlier in the week that I was hoping to get to, but now seems just as fitting as it was then. A little something from Morrissey.
The kind people have a wonderful dream. Margaret Gillotin. Cause people like you make me feel so tired. When will you die? When will you die? People like you make me feel so old inside. You die. Unkind people do not shelter this dream, make it real. Dream real. Make the dream real. Make it real. Make the dream real. Make it real.
That's just lovely. Margaret on the Guillotine by Morrissey. Thanks, Sandra. And the sentiment is more than appropriate. And now, as the lyric says, the dream is real. Email coming in from Andy. Subject line, conversation with Sandra, President Obama on chained CPI. Andy notes, switching to the chained CPI is a cut to Social Security, multiplying the negative effect every year. It impacts the most vulnerable in our society. A hit to my solar plexus, even though I expected it, it still knocks the wind right out of me. Social Security is not enough now, with the demise in defined benefit plans and risks placed on individuals to manage their own 401ks and IRAs. This move by Mr. Obama is beyond my comprehension. It's a true downer. In regards to the Democratic Party, I feel totally let down and terribly, awfully disappointed with the leadership. This move to cut Social Security wipes out years of positive history with the party. A devastating body blow. We must remove the leadership of the Democratic Party. A must. They're eviscerating the lives of working people. The switch damages the Democratic Party brand. Thanks, signed, Andy. And what amazes me most out of this is that there's been a conversation going on about how the Republican Party is on the way out. The Republican Party is doing itself right out of political relevance. So what? The Democratic Party decided to say, you know what, we'll do the same thing. Yeah, it just beats the devil out of me. Democrats' ability to form circular firing squads is nothing short of astonishing. Oh, darn. Not again. Yep, audio has gone funny. Let's see if we can fix this real quick. I'll disappear momentarily and come back and see if anything's any better. Stand by, y'all.